5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Fire MCs to call me sire. To run my kingdom, you must choose fire. I won't stop rocking till I retire. Now we
rock. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show after that 7-Up break. And we do appreciate all the work and support that we get from Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get over the BBVA Compass Stadium. All kinds of big games coming there. The Gold Cup is coming there. We saw Querétaro and Ronaldinho there earlier in the year. Live soccer is where it's at down there, whether it's a Houston Dynamo Dash. Bud Light reminds you to get down and support the game live in Houston. Bud Light, longtime sponsors, certainly of me on the radio, and I can't say thank you enough to Budweiser and Bud Light for all the support they have provided. They are the official sponsor of Major League Soccer and the Mexican national team. And as we talk Mexico, well, we have to bring in our expert. He's Tom Marshall of ESPN. Tom, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show from Guadalajara, Mexico.
No problem, Glenn. It's always a pleasure.
Well, let's first talk, obviously, with something that's very important going on here, connected to the Houston Dynamo. Eric Cubo Torres was accused and alleged of sexual assault. Tell us what's going on there and what your thoughts on the situation is.
Yeah, I mean, first thing to point out, like you said there, it is only an accusation at the minute, so there's nothing been kind of not been charged with anything. Basically, a local newspaper picked up on it that on the 22nd of April, there's a 19-year-old girl accusing him of sexual abuse, is the actual term. The allegation, if you read it in the newspaper, is to do with spiked drinks. So, yeah, it is serious. It's one of those where it's very difficult to have an opinion about because, you know, it's an allegation at this point and you know, you just don't want to get involved with that kind of thing. But from a football point of view, for Kubo's point of view, you know, it's been a terrible season for him, to be honest. I mean, you know, he was on the bench yesterday for Chivas against Atlas, and then in the first leg of that quarterfinal, also against Atlas, he wasn't even in the 18. So it's not going well for Kubo at all at the minute.
Yeah, and he's had some good games in the Copa MX and things. I mean, is it just that you know, Chepo de la Torre just doesn't have the confidence in playing him, or is he just in a pecking order that's behind the likes of Fabian and De Nigris? I mean, what do you think it is? Why doesn't he get more opportunity?
Well, I actually asked Chepo de la Torre about this about, I think, 2 weeks ago, and he said, you know, basically, Kubo came into preseason a bit late, and by that time he wasn't quite in rhythm where the other players were a step ahead. And so what Chepo said was basically Kubo's been a step behind since then. And obviously the team have been doing quite well. Omar Bravo is one goal away now from breaking Chivas' all-time goal-scoring record. I mean, formation-wise, Chivas only played with one striker as well. So that, you know, that really doesn't help Kubo Torres because at the minute he's behind Omar Bravo and Aldo de Nigris for that spot. So combination of factors, you know, but nobody could have predicted this before the season. I think everybody thought he would be the automatic starter and it'd be the others trying to kind of displace him.
He's Tom Marshall joining us. Kubo Torres, you know, with social media now, whenever there's something alleged, before it's been investigated, it's kind of sad because people rush so quickly to judgment. What's it like down in Guadalajara? Obviously on the internet, it was all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, on Saturday, the story broke, and it was everywhere. It was the story of the day. You know, it was one day before Chivas' biggest game of the season. You know, it's just very difficult. It's a very, I think more than anything, it's sad because if it's true, then obviously it's very sad from one point of view. If it's not true, it's also really sad from the other point of view because it damages his reputation. So, you know, it's really difficult to come to any conclusion without knowing the actual facts.
Yeah, very, very difficult. All right, you took in the Atlas Chivas game, and obviously last night I flipped the TV on and I was just astounded to see, I guess, rioting and the fights going on in the crowd and police and security coming in there. You were at the match. Talk about it.
Yeah, it was again, very sad scenes. I mean, you know, Atlas went 4-1 behind, sorry. I mean, this is a club without a trophy since 1951. And the fans are just absolutely desperate for any kind of success, more so against Chivas. And that has spilled over. And it spilled over on occasion, and it did so again on Sunday. There was one pitch invader who went on, who quite jumped the barrier, and that kind of inspired about 20 to 30 other Atlas fans who also followed him and jumped on the pitch. The game was stopped for about 15, 20 minutes. There's some awful scenes with, you know, police and a section of the fans kind of trying to beat each other with batons. So, ugly scenes. And I think there has been a huge response today in Mexico in terms of there has to be something done about this behavior.
Yeah, so what do they do about it? Because at times it seems like it's almost been accepted. And, you know, listen, this is beamed out all across the United States. This is not good PR for Liga MX. And no. People here look at it and then make judgment about the entire league because of the behavior of specific groups of fans. We know it's been going on for a long time. Is it just them coming up now and, you know, because it's fresh, saying that they're going to try to do something about it and then look the other way? Or do you really think they can do something about it? And if they can, what is it you're going to do?
I mean, it's, you know, this happened where I'm from in England, and there was an absolute revolution in the way the match-going experience completely changed. And I think that at some point that is going to have to happen in Mexico. The big fear, and I think the fear of people here in the media and the league, is that it turns out like in Argentina, because we saw those scenes, Boca against River, the last week. Nobody wants that. Now, what can they do? First of all, the majority of Mexican stadiums aren't segregated. And it's one of the things that I absolutely love about the game down here is the fact that you get Chivas and Atlas fans mixed, boyfriend, girlfriend, going together to the game. You couldn't get that in many European countries in South America. But the problem at the heart of the matter at the moment in Mexico is the Barras Bravas, which were, you know, a South American idea that has been exported to Mexico and has slowly got a bit more power within the clubs. And, you know, and they're a bad influence. They do provide the atmosphere, but stepped over the limit now, and I think we're going to see, you know, real crackdown from authorities. I mean, these guys should be in jail now, but
yeah,
you know,
there's a criminal.
Only 10 got arrested, so
yeah, there's a criminal element to some of these groups. That's fact all over the world. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the power that some of these groups have over clubs to be destructive puts a lot of these clubs in fear. Do you think it's that deep, like in Argentina, in Mexico, where you know, some of these supporters groups, because of their strength and their relationship with the pro clubs, have maybe the clubs in a little bit of fear?
Maybe a little bit, but I honestly don't think it's anything like in Argentina.
Yeah.
I think that it has been more violent over the last few years. And I think now they have to nip it in the bud. They have to stop it. Now they have to really crack down. While we still can, while before these groups get even more power. But yeah, I don't think it is as bad as in Argentina. There's certain clubs as well, like Atlas and the 51, that's the Barra group, and they're known in Mexico for having a bit of a reputation. You've got the Pumas one as well, who's got a bit of reputation, and, you know, certain other ones. But in general, most of the time things go pretty smoothly. It's just these idiots, basically. I mean, yesterday it was a group of what, 50 to 100 fans out of 60,000 who really kind of just damaged the reputation of not just Atlas, but the whole of Mexican football.
Are they just guys that want to fight and mix it up and, I mean, kind of use their devotion to the professional team and support and loyalty as maybe a mask in some ways, because there's a real distinct difference. You know, you support a club, you're representing as well, and that type of behavior does not represent either club well.
Yeah, I think more than that, I think it's just young people with not much to do who put all their energies into following one club, and you know, they get discounted travel to different parts of Mexico, and it's like the kind of life is revolved, the social life is revolved around following that club. I mean, I've been on a couple of trips with the Chivas, Barra, Rava, and also the Atlas one, and that's my impression. I mean, the scary thing is, Glenn, that, you know, I've been with the Atlas fans before, I've travelled to Morelia with them on the bus, and, you know, some of the things I saw that day were absolutely awful as well. And the fact that there was violence yesterday just doesn't surprise me at all. And I think that anybody in the league or in kind of, you know, who's in charge of policing these games has to know that, and has to know that the status quo right now in Mexico isn't doing it. And the, you know, my personal opinion is, if they don't do something about this in the near future, there will be a tragedy. I mean, there really will be. It's not just these kids either. It's the way that the police, I'm not talking about the individual police people, I'm talking about the way the police is awful. The police don't know what they're doing in controlling these kind of groups, and they have to learn the lesson quickly.
Yeah, somebody's going to die. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Somebody's going to die.
By the way, the incident you were talking about with River and Boca, for those of you listening in tonight here to Tom and I, basically, can you imagine this? Pepper spray sprayed by Boca supporters on the River Plate players, an irritant that it came on the field, was sprayed into the tunnel when River Plate was coming on the field. I mean, this is stuff you would get thrown in jail for. You'd never be allowed to go to a game again.
Yeah, I know. And it's really not in playing football, and I think they know that now. You know, I think it really is. It's just sad that it has to take an incident like that before people kind of start acting. And hopefully in Mexico, that doesn't need to happen. Hopefully they see those scenes from Sunday. And like you said, Glenn, everybody in the US looks at that. And there's a growing interest in Mexican football in the United States. And people seeing that are turned off by it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And look, it's... it's so distasteful, you know. When you watch that on TV, you just shake your head and you go, "These are human beings." I mean, it's such animalistic behavior that you begin to question the human race.
What we should be talking about is Marco Fabian's amazing hat trick, and you know, it takes away from the positive side of the game, without doubt.
All right, let's talk about the last four teams: Atlas and Chivas, Veracruz and Querétaro. Let's go to Veracruz and Querétaro. What do you see over there? Is Ronaldinho still performing up to par here?
He played both legs of the quarterfinal against Veracruz, and on Sunday he had his best game since he's been in Mexico. Actually scored the goal. It was a bit of a lucky goal, but it seems to be picking up for him. And now that Querétaro are in the semi-finals, there's just this kind of feeling that, you know, is that Ronaldinho magic mixed with Victor Manuel Vucetic, is the most successful Mexican coach ever. Is that combination now suddenly kind of rubbing off on this Querétaro club who's never won a title in the whole history? So it's very interesting what's going on at Querétaro, and they've got Pachuca in the semi-final, and they'll definitely be fancying the chances against a Pachuca team that defensively isn't that great.
So out of the four, Pachuca, Querétaro, Santos and Chivas, who do you think is trending upward right now? If you looked at those four teams, who do you think is the most confident since the playoffs have started, if there is one?
Querétaro, I think, you know, for those reasons that I just stated, and also Chivas. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chivas, just the size of the club and that performance on Sunday against Atlas. I mean, the way Marco Fabian just turned it on, just he looked like he was just in complete control of the ball and with that, the game. And I think key players for Chivas are coming good right now, so that bodes well. But then you've got a team like Santos Laguna, and you know, they're the most coach Pedro Caixinha has come from Portugal, very tactically aware, and you know, they went to Tigres on Saturday, won 1-0, so you can't discount them either. I think Pachuca are going to struggle just because Eric Gutierrez is a player that we have to keep an eye on. He's already gone now to Mexico's under-20 squad in Australia. to prepare for the World Cup. He's a key part of their team, the heartbeat of the Pachuca team. So I think Pachuca might struggle because of that. But there's two teams that go Querétaro and Chivas right now for the final.
All right, let's take the allegations out of the Kubo Torres situation here. Just look at it from a playing standpoint. And by the way, you wrote an article where he has made it very clear that he's innocent, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm gonna link this article up on the Soccer Matters Facebook page. I guess I don't even know where to go with this because, I mean, the Gold Cup, Copa America coming, who knows if he's even playing soccer?
Yeah, no, one thing, though, Glenn, that's worth pointing out is that he wasn't in the Copa America squad.
Yeah.
So definitely not going to that in June. And just by matter of elimination, he won't be going to the Gold Cup either because Mexico's four strikers will be Vela, Chicharito, Giovanni Dos Santos, and Oribe Peralta. So you've got those four, and I think there's almost guaranteed that those four will be there. And so Kubo, the only issue surrounding is, you know, what he's going to do this summer. Is he going to go to the Pan American Games in Toronto? Which I think if you're a Houston Dynamo fan and he goes there, you would be very disappointed. I mean, obviously the caveat is that will this case that's going on in the minute in Guadalajara have any effect? I mean, honestly, I don't know at this moment.
Yeah, it's something you just don't want to pass judgment on. I'm just waiting to see how it all unfolds. I'm not jumping anywhere too fast because I think we all have a tendency to just jump in right away and have an opinion without even knowing what the facts are. How can anybody know what the facts are?
And I think it might take a long time as well. I mean, the law is a bit different down here. Obviously, in the United States, you're innocent until proven guilty. In Mexico, you're guilty and until proven innocent. It's the reverse. So it's not that the legal system isn't as open as in the Western Europe and the US. So I think what's going to happen is this is going to drag on for a long time.
Well, Tom, as always, so insightful. We appreciate you coming on the program. Remind everybody where they can get your writings.
Yeah, it's up on ESPN FC, Liga MX, and the Mexican national team.
I'm going to link some of Tom's articles on the Facebook Soccer Matters page as well, and that's how you can get your way over to ESPNFC.com. Tom, as always, thank you very much. Great insight from Mexico, and we'll be coming back to you again to keep us up on the Mexican League playoffs.
Justin Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right, he's the one and only Tom Marshall, ESPNFC, and we get it straight from him down in Mexico. We'll take a break. We have a lot more to come here on the program.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gao Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back. Quick word here for Budweiser. Budweiser reminds you to get over to HoustonDynamo.com and get down to BBVA Compass Stadium. Take in games live. That's where you can see the Dynamo. You can see Will Bruin and company taking on all the best of Major League Soccer. Bud Light, longtime sponsors of the game of soccer here in Houston and personally have supported me on the radio for years. So a big thank you to Bud Light, and it's a perfect segue into the man I just mentioned. Will Bruin joins us now after a two-goal performance against the Portland Timbers. Will, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, put into context the importance of this win, especially after getting a great road win in Toronto, but then capping that win with a real comprehensive home win.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about it. Brad brought it up before the game. He said, we haven't won back-to-back games since last August. So when you kind of look at that and you kind of realize that, man, it's been that long since we won two games in a row, it's kind of shocking. But we really wanted to be the aggressor in this game and come out with our foot on the pedal instead of, because we're at home with the crowd support, so we wanted to put the pressure on them.
9 minutes in, you get the header, the great delivery from Davis. It froze the goalkeeper of Portland. You created some great open space for yourself. Tell me how that happened.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure who was marking me. I kind of saw myself free. I was like, okay, well, everybody's kind of crowding in the near post, so I'm going to come around the back post, and maybe something will get flicked on or something, and obviously Brad put in a great ball, and it was one of those where you almost have too much time to think about the header, but you know, I just headed it down, and more times than not, it goes in when you head it down.
He's Will Bruin joining us here. Two-goal performance against the Portland Timbers. You know, every weekend around the world when games are played, you'll see strikers that are waiting for delivery to come to them, as opposed to being in that mindset of making runs and believing you're going to get on the end of delivery and hitting areas as opposed to waiting and reacting. How important is that as a striker, to be someone who's like, look, I'm going to hit the post, hit the near post, and believe that the delivery will get there?
Exactly. I think the run is just as important as the finish. If you don't make your run with conviction or pace, you know, then you're going to get bumped off the ball, or a center back's going to be able to just kind of nudge you when you go up. So the run is very important. And like you said, you can't react to it. As when you're attacking the set pieces, you can't just react to where the ball's going to go. You got to get there with confidence that the ball is going to be whipped in there, and then that's how you finish it. Because if you were trying to react to the service, obviously you're going to be a step behind, the defender clear it out, and it's not going to go as well.
He's Will Bruin joining us here tonight. Let's talk about your second goal, because I think I made the comment on the Root Sports broadcast that you were the smartest man in the room or the smartest man on the field, because this was a play that, you know, some people might have turned their brain off and been walking around, you know, with the score the way it was. You obviously were still connected and saw something that maybe many others didn't.
Yeah, well, that's funny. When I went back and watched it, Borchers didn't even think I was coming. Like, I don't think any of the center backs, either of the center backs, had any inclination that I was going to be making the run. And that's just when it gets hot down here in Houston, you see plays out, so things like that can happen.
Yeah, without a doubt. Did you get the sense that they were fading in the latter stages in the last 15 minutes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We actually watched that goal today during film, and it was about 2 minutes where we had the ball possessing it, just moving it side to side. And there's nothing worse than having to defend in the heat like that. And then to cap it off with that goal, it was just a good little two-minute span.
Now, lobbing a goalkeeper like that, I know strikers take a little bit more satisfaction out of that type of goal. It was a class goal. You lobbed a goalkeeper. It was almost a delicate goal you scored, but, man, what a goal it was.
Yeah. When I hit it, I was like, oh, please be enough, because I didn't want to hit it over the net, obviously. You just want to barely touch it and get it up and down real quick. I thought maybe the goalie was going to get his hands on it, but I put enough on it to get it over him, which was good.
So this game, I commented to somebody after that I thought this may have been your best game in the history of the Houston Dynamo. And here's the reason why, Will. And I know you had hat tricks against DC, and you played a lot of great games for the Dynamo.
Yeah.
But I thought your game without the ball against Portland Saturday night was exceptional.
Yeah, I think that's something that Owen's been really good at kind of teaching me, so to say, because, you know, I've usually had more success with a partner up there, and now playing up there by yourself, you gotta be well rounded. You gotta know how to play it. And we've been talking about smart running a lot, because you know when it gets hot or when it's late on in the game, you can't just run to run. There has to be reasons for your runs. If you just run around like a madman, then you're gonna tire yourself out, obviously. So picking and choosing when to make runs, when to hold the ball, or when to press, it all comes just with more experience at the position.
Now, I know I asked you on the Root Sports broadcast, you know, you do have a coach who was a big goal scorer, so I was kind of trying to find out if there are a lot of little subtle things he's doing. I thought your use of your body, too, when you were going up in the air, even balls you weren't winning, you were leaning in on their defenders, putting them off a little bit so that they didn't have a clear run at heading the ball. And I just, your body control, there were so many little things that I thought were just exceptional. Does he get specific with you?
He does. The first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is he tells me to use my weight against them, like kind of use my body weight as leverage against opposing defenders and kind of just like roll off of them, you know, instead of trying to out-muscle them, just kind of use my weight and their weight like against them. If they're coming in hard, I kind of just will turn a little and they run into me and I just peel off them, you know what I'm saying, a little bit. So it's kind of like you said, using body weight and control. It's all little things that we've been talking about a lot this year, and it all kind of came to fruition last night or Saturday night.
Yeah, so look, I mean, he came in, he said, Owen Coyle made it very, very clear that look, past reputation doesn't mean anything. And it's almost like he's coming in with a clean slate. He's got to assess all the players that he's inheriting based on MLS, based on a lot of things. All right, so nobody's been a sacred cow on this team. Everybody's sat on the bench. Bonilla, Garcia, all guys that are starters. Kofi now. Yeah. Let me ask you, when you were not starting a couple of the games in the beginning of the year, what kind of goes through your mind? Was that a healthy thing for you?
You know, it was. To be honest, I could have easily pouted and been like, oh, why me, blah, blah, I've got something against me. But Owen does a really good job at making sure that nobody takes it personal. The only way you can change it is on the practice field. I mean, feeling bad for yourself, making excuse, that doesn't do anybody any good. So I think sitting on the bench, and then when I would get my minutes, it makes them much more valuable, and it makes you want to work harder at trainings to get back into the 11. It's always the goal to be in the 11, and if you're not in the 11, it's the goal to be in the 18 and then get on the field. So there's a lot of steps to the process, but you know, it ultimately comes down to just taking care of your own work on the training pitch every day.
And I guess it's a great feeling because people have seen examples already that, you know, you may not be in the starting lineup, but you put the work in, you produce, you'll get right back in there. And that's been obvious in your case.
Yeah, exactly. Things change week to week. You know, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but we've probably had a lot of different lineup changes already this year. But 12 games, we've probably had, I don't know, 6-7 different lineups. But I mean, that just makes the working week up to the game that much more important.
Is that made it interesting and invigorating for the players? You know, different lineups, differing tactics for different games. You know, there is something fresh and new about that.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think it's a good way of not letting guys get too complacent. I think sometimes with the long season, if guys are regularly playing every game, they're just like, maybe I don't have to be at my best this week because I'll be in it next week. But now, you know, you got to be at your best every game because you could get pulled from the 11.
Yeah, Will Bruin joining us here tonight. What a performance against the Portland Timbers. If you were not down there, soccer fans, you have not been in BBVA Compass Stadium. You got to get down there. It's a great experience. The Dynamo are playing great now. They've won two in a row. They will head to Los Angeles this week. So speaking of L.A., you may or may not have seen them yesterday against Orlando. Your former teammate, Tally Hall, getting back in goal, I'm sure that was something nice for you to see.
Yeah, that was great for Tally. I mean, it's a terrible injury he had, but, you know, the long rehab is all worth the game, I'm sure. I'm sure he felt great getting the win.
How about just looking at that game and the environment and the crowd, which was spectacular? You know, obviously I was there. It was an amazing atmosphere, an hour and 20 minutes before the game. What are your thoughts looking at Orlando from the outside?
It looks fun, to tell you the truth. It looks like it would be a fun club to play at. They got great support. Obviously, it's their first year, but their fan draw out has been amazing. That's just great for the sport, great for the league. There's just so many positives that come with it.
So heading into the L.A. game, you guys had a very good road game out in Los Angeles. I got to think you guys are sky high right now, confidence-wise.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like we've got two wins. We are sky high, but we can't get too high because we got another game come Friday. You know, so we enjoyed it through the weekend, but now it's all focused on LA. We know this is the perfect time to go play them after they took a 4-0 defeat. But you know, if we focus on us and we're focused for 90 minutes, we're a very tough team to beat.
All right, so my gut tells me after the center backs had some problems against Orlando that Omar Gonzalez will be back in the lineup. I know you've played against him a number of times.
Yeah.
How do you deal with a guy like Omar Gonzalez as a defender? He's a designated player for the LA Galaxy, U.S. national team guy. What would be some of the things you do against a defender of that stature?
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's good with his speed. He's very good in the air, so obviously he's going to be tough to beat on goal kicks or restarts. But you know, I think that's one of those where you got to keep going after him. You can't let the game be easy for him. Like I did against Portland, running down that last ball. You got to chase every ball down. You got to do a lot of movement in and around him because I'm sure he doesn't like to chase forward. So you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to like everything in front of him. So if I can turn him and get him running, kind of get him out of his comfort zone, that'll give us the best opportunity to get chances going forward.
He's Will Bruin. He is part of the Houston Dynamo, who will be on their way to Los Angeles this Friday to take on the LA Galaxy. Hey, Will, great game. Best of luck against Los Angeles. We'll all be back here in Houston watching.
All right. Thanks, Glenn.
All right. That's the one and only Will Bruin. We'll take a break here. Much more to come. It's a 7-Up break.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. A longtime favorite here in Houston. In fact, you can still see his picture up at Intercontinental Airport in a promotion advertising Houston, Texas. He's former Dynamo goalkeeper, now the goalkeeper of Orlando City. He's Tally Hall. Tally, thanks for coming back on the show.
Always happy to be here, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Well, great having you on the program. And for me, it was very exciting to go down to Orlando, number one, to pick off that great environment you guys have. But then I found out you're in the starting lineup on national television coming back from the ACL injury. When did you find out about it? And just kind of describe the emotion of coming full circle off the injury.
Coach let me know, before the game, and it was good. I hadn't felt really nervous in a while. I think it's an emotion that, maybe fans do or don't understand that even as a guy that's played in a fair amount of games, every game I get nervous, and to feel that again was something I've missed. And it's been a long time. It's been a lot of hard work. I've had a lot of people to help get me back, and I'm grateful to be putting on a jersey again.
Describe this emotion of this crowd, Tally. This was my first trip to Orlando to do a game. It was spectacular. It was almost like there was a party going on in the stands about an hour and 20 minutes before the game behind one of the goals. I mean, music. It was almost like it was a nightclub back there, and everybody was getting juiced up for this game against the Galaxy.
Yeah, it was obviously a big game for us. The fans have been tremendous for all the games, and hadn't had a home win yet, and so the fans deserved it. They've been fantastic, and so to get a win at home in front of them that they could feel and they could enjoy with us was nice. And on a personal note, beating the Galaxy is always an enjoyable experience. So it was a good night.
Comprehensive you guys were from start to finish. What astounded me was the pace that you had from minute one to minute 90. It did not ever seem to waver to me. I mean, you went after them all night long. And, I was kind of waiting in the second half. Okay, is there going to be a little bit of a lull here? But, man, the guys were running as hard in the 90th minute as they were in the first.
Yeah, hats off to the guys that came on and played, because it, when you're 2-0 up, you think, oh, if they get a goal back, they're really in this game. But as you're 4-0 up with really 15 minutes left, there's such a natural emotional response to say, okay, let's just conserve and sit back, and the guys can continue to work hard. I mean, guys were exhausted coming off the field. I think it's a credit to the way that we've been wanting to play. We haven't, really put a 90 minutes like that together when we have a plan start to finish and everyone executes it. It was a great performance and hopefully something that we can build on moving forward.
Dynamo goalkeeper, former Dynamo goalkeeper, now Orlando City. See that?
Old habits.
you can give me a yellow. I'm so used to interviewing you when you were a Dynamo, Tally. See, old habits don't fade very fast. How about just the personal side of it? Coming back from the injury, your first touch on the ball in that game, just the sight, the sound of everything being back in a soccer environment, especially one with 40,000 people.
It was a funny thing. The first time I get the ball, I'm thinking of, get it from my right back. I want to switch it to my left back, and I take a touch, and my center back's right there. I'm like,
All right, let's just slow this one down. I took an extra touch. I just slowly passed it to the center back, and just wanted to get my feet wet a little bit. I mean, it's been a long time, but then as soon as you're back, you don't even really you don't think of it as being a long time. So it's been good for me on the mental and emotional side to take a step away from soccer and you know, be forced to watch it. Be forced to dedicate myself to something that isn't on the field. I mean, getting healthy is almost entirely off the field, and so to have that taken away from me was an eye-opening experience. So now that I'm coming back, you know, I want to be a different goalkeeper, not crazy different, but I think that there's room for me to grow, and I want to see where that room where that gets me. And so I'm excited. I'm probably 10-15 pounds lighter than I have been in the last couple of years, and I'm you know, fitness and nutrition has taken center stage in how I prepare myself, so it's been really good for me.
He's Tally Hall joining us here. How important has your wife and family been through this whole process? Because, you know, the coming back from an injury and doing all the physical therapy, having been there, it can be a very lonely place, even though you're a part of a team.
Yeah, there's been some times that, you know, I come home and I need some support, and there's been times that I come home and I think I need some support, and my wife is the one saying, like, you need to get over this hurdle, and there's no one else that can do it but you. And, you know, there's a couple times that happened, and it surprised me a little bit. And then I came back from training the next day and said, "You're absolutely right. I'm really glad you said that, because, you know, there are times that you think you need to speed up when you need to slow down in the recovery, and there's times that you think, okay, I need to maybe just keep going slow, and when actually the signs are telling you you're ready to move on, it's a funny and sometimes tricky process that you know, you kind of work your way through, and you know, to come home and have someone that's there to fight those battles with you is it's good. I mean, it changes the rehab completely.
The hectic world of professional soccer, you know, the soccer players always thinking about, how do I improve? How do I get better? How do I get in the starting lineup? How do we win games? How do I improve a specific element of my game? There's so many things that goes on through the mind of a professional athlete and people in general, whether you have a job or you're in TV and radio, you think about a lot of things. Is it ever hard for you to just be still? And did the injury kind of make you still to think, analyze, and maybe propel you forward, as you mentioned, in some kind of unique and different ways?
Well, yeah, it forced me to be still, but at the same time, when you're in the cycle of games, and for the past 2 or 3 years, it was making runs late into the playoffs, you know, into the final. You get some time off, and then, you know, January camp, and so you just get in the cycle of constantly playing, and so it's hard. You know, it's such a long season that you're constantly trying to maintain, or else your body will break down. So to have 8 or 9 months off that I didn't have to worry about maintaining my ability to play soccer, I just had to continue to build. And so that, you know, building requires more time, more effort, more dedication. And so that's what gets you stronger at the end of rehab. It's not that my knee is going to be stronger than it was before, but the dedication that I've put to get here, if that can, you know, you continue that trend through, instead of going home, instead of showing up when you're supposed to show up, more or less, and you know, going home when everyone goes home, when you're rehabbing, you show up before everyone and you stay a couple hours after. And so you have to find that balance of dedicating more of yourself to the game than is required. Sometimes it's watching video, sometimes it's working out, but whatever it is, you dedicate more of yourself to the game. And now that I'm, back on the field playing, you still take that level of dedication and it propels you past the point that you started in when you got hurt, for me 9 months ago.
Tally, talk to me about the team shape you had. I thought Hines was excellent in front of you. Really, everybody had a good game. I thought this young man, Christian Higuita, had a wonderful game in midfield. I know all the attention went sort of to some of the attacking players like Kaká. But Christian Higuita, Hines, all these guys playing a big role in this win and very effective. You guys played pretty much mistake-free.
Yeah, I think, it would be easy to say that the Galaxy were not having their best night, and I don't think that they performed at the level that they expect from themselves. But I think you also have to give credit to our team. I think we met them further up the field than they expected. Zardes, I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I think he has done great with Galaxy. I think he's earned every minute that he's gotten with the national team. I think he's an exciting young player, and I think we did an excellent job of containing him because he's not an easy player to contain. And even if the rest of the team is having a bad game, he is still a player that can do something special. And the guys were phenomenal about getting on top of him, not letting him turn and really run at us. So it was, I think a large part had to do with the way we played from minute one and we continued to the end of the game.
Talk to me about Kaká as we finish this up, and I'll let you go, Tally. Talk to me about Kaká and what he's meant, because obviously he's the face of this franchise. He's doing a ton of promotional stuff. He lived up to it. I was amazed at some of the times he knocked balls forward, and then he would be the guy making an extended run looking for the ball back behind defenses. What's it like playing with a world-class star like this, and what has he meant to you in the locker room?
Yep. Watching him play, playing with him, I mean, it puts a smile on your face. I mean, some of the things he does, you're almost laughing because it's like the goal that he had an assist on. It's like his touch around, a sliding center back was just so smooth and almost so effortless. But it's difficult to do when you're running at full speed just to take a touch. It was a great play, but he does things all the time. I expected him to get fouled much more than he has been. I was expecting that to be the biggest hurdle for him to adjusting to MLS because it is a different league than anything he's had to play in, and his strength on the ball, his ability to kind of move and be nimble is really negated a lot of the issues that top players come to this league have to deal with. I think he's done a great job transitioning. I know there's going to be a lot of people who say, of course, he's former World Player of the Year. Like he's not going to have trouble adjusting to any league, but every league has obstacles and this league is no different. So I think he's done a phenomenal job. He has never really turned down an opportunity to give back to the fans in a way to say thank you. I mean, I think the tribute to Kevin Molino is not something that was fan driven or the team said this. It was a surprise to me. I think, it's a guy that genuinely cares about the team, his teammates, the fans, and that was – that was from the heart from him. So he's a great teammate but when you watch him play, some of the things he does, it's like it's not fair.
No, it isn't. He put on a show yesterday. Tally, listen, first and foremost, congratulations coming back from the injury. That's always a difficult one for any professional athlete. Congratulations on the win. and the great environment down in Orlando, and we look forward to having you on the show again.
Thanks. I always love being on your show, man.
Well, we're gonna have our Tally Hall watch here on Soccer Matters, okay?
All right, sounds good.
You got it. Thank you, Tally. That's Tally Hall, Houston Dynamo. We wrap it up in former Houston Dynamo. That's the second time I did that. We wrap it up in big style here tonight with Tally in Orlando. What an environment down there is all I can tell you. If you have an opportunity to get there, you got to try it. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters for all the radio show information. For producer Michael Carroll, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.
This Valentine's Day, create a space that feels warm and welcoming with help from Menards. Whether it's a small refresh or a big project, Menards has the tools and materials you need. Build something together and make your home a place you both love coming back to. Don't forget the sweets for your sweetheart. Get a 6-ounce bag of Russell Stover chocolate candies for $3.99 now through February 14th. Save big money and finish your projects together at Menards. Save big.